Good, good. First hour. Welcome back, or good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are. Nice to have you here. I'm Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California in the Quicken Loans studios. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently with Quicken Loans. We had West Point quarterback, Army quarterback, Kelvin Hopkins Jr. Not very surprised to realize that the quarterback at Army is extremely impressive. And he was. Darius Leonard from the Colts also was in for our number one. Coming up in about 15 minutes, golfer Cody Blick, who's got a great story. Also, this comes in. It says, Rome, would love to hear your story on Douglas v. Tyson. When they started promoting the 42-1 part, I always thought that does not do it justice. I always thought it was something like 80-1 or higher. Again, that became a thing because ESPN had a 30-for-30 doc on that fight. Douglas and Tyson, you might have watched the re-air of the fight itself. Again, I said it. I tweeted it last night, and a lot of you did not agree. I said that at that point in my life, both as a broadcaster and even as a sports fan, that was the most stunning upset I'd ever seen. And I think even to this day, I would stand by that. You know, just to give you a little insight into that, Teddy Atlas also is on my podcast later on today. Make sure you check that out. Teddy's great. That's coming up later this afternoon. Really quickly, the fight Douglas and Mike Tyson was in February of 1990. In February of 1990, I was still doing a local sports talk show in Santa Barbara. I wasn't even to San Diego yet. I hadn't even made it to San Diego, 690 a.m., where I got my first big break. So I was doing a talk show 1 hour a night, and I was doing gaucho games as well. And understand, the world was so different. In 1990, there was no internet, there was no social, and that was a fight in Japan in the middle of the night, or a fight that was like 15, 18 hours, whatever the time difference is, it was that far away. So a lot of people didn't see the fight. A lot of people just heard after the fact that this is what happened. But I remember that fight, and going into the fight, I can't stress this enough, 42-1. 42-1. I would have never taken that. I mean, that does not begin to do it justice. I mean, it should have been 1,000-1. Mike Tyson was 37-0, 33 by knockout, 23 years old, and at the peak of his powers. And if you're old enough to remember, and I don't mean like watching YouTube highlights, and that's not a bad place to start, but if you're old enough to remember, back then, Mike would get into the ring against grown-ass men. I mean, the baddest guys there are. Understand also, back then there was no UFC, there was no MMA. Boxing was a thing still. And the heavyweight division was the thing. And the heavyweight champion of the world made you the baddest guy alive. And Tyson was the baddest of the baddest. I mean, I saw grown-ass guys step between the ropes, shredded, look like they were going to cry before the fight even started. Never mind guys that were beaten before they stepped between the ropes. I mean, dudes that looked like they were going to cry. I'd never seen a more intimidating guy in my life. And in that fight, and the whole thing was so weird because it wasn't here. The fight was in Japan, which was strange. It wasn't in Vegas. It wasn't in Atlantic City. But understand about Douglas. Douglas was not a threat to anybody other than he and his own people and what they thought. They thought they would stick him in front of Mike. He'd fall down as soon as he got hit like everybody else. And they were setting Mike up for a big payday. I think most people didn't really know what Mike was dealing with, that Mike wasn't ready mentally, physically, that Mike had been knocked down in training. And then you have Buster Douglas. And if you see the fight, if you've seen the replay of the fight, I mean, my man is like 6'2", 250, and shredded, and motivated, and extremely talented. And he had had some issues, too. He wasn't always right either. But he was right for that fight. And if you watch that fight, and the thing that was so stunning, you know, I get into this with Teddy Atlas today on the podcast. I don't want to give that away, but Teddy's whole thing about Mike was, Mike was never, as bad as Mike was, and remember, Teddy was with Mike. Teddy came up with Mike. Teddy was with Customato training Mike until Mike allegedly had something happen with a niece of Teddy's, and Teddy got a gun and put it to Mike's head, and then Cus asked Teddy to leave. But Teddy's whole thing on Mike has always been that Mike is not a Viking. Mike is not a warrior. Mike is not a gladiator. Mike did not live that Spartan lifestyle. So I'll never forget when Mike came out of prison and Mike went back to fighting. Mike was not the same fighter, but Mike was still scary. Mike was still intimidating. And I remember seeing him fight Evander Holyfield. and thinking, Holyfield, man, he's a small heavyweight anyway. Mike's going to blow him out. And then Holyfield stood right in front of him and was not intimidated. Same thing with Buster Douglas that night. And a lot of people want to say it was a fluke. It was lucky. And there's nothing lucky about that. Just like there's nothing lucky about a so-called lucky punch. And that's not what that was. Douglas dominated that fight start to finish. He manhandled Mike. It was incredible. There was no one lucky punch. And to me, there's no such thing as a lucky punch. Even if it's like some Hail Mary, some home run shot, and you're getting your ass kicked the entire fight, if you land it, you get credit for it. It's not lucky. If you land it and a guy goes down, it's a punch. But that's not what Buster Douglas did. He dominated that fight. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. I mean, I was in awe the entire time. Like, I can't believe this is happening. And then Mike. And then Mike started to throw haymakers and home run shots and bombs. And he caught him with a shot in the eighth round. An unbelievable uppercut. And then Douglas went down. And I remember thinking, exactly, where's that been all night long? Mike's not right. Mike's not ready. But Mike still has it in him to land that shot. And he did. And Buster barely beat the count. Just barely beat the count. Got himself back together somehow, some way between rounds. And then finished Mike with that unbelievable uppercut himself. And to me, it's one of the most amazing images ever. I will never forget Mike in Tokyo on the canvas. And that shot, the combination, knocked his mouthpiece clear out. I'll never forget. And most fight fans know what I'm saying. I will never forget Mike fumbling around for his mouthpiece, trying to get his mouthpiece back in, having no idea where he was. And even after the fight, I don't think he knew he lost until he finally started to come around. I'm going to stand by that. That was the most stunning thing. We can argue whether or not that was the biggest upset ever, but that was, to me, the most stunning thing I had ever seen in sports, and maybe even to this day still yet. 42-1. I mean, I wouldn't, 1,000-1, maybe. I never understood that 42-1, like that number arbitrarily. That does not begin to do justice to what the public thought. And that Mike was just unbeatable, indomitable. I mean, he would have eaten your children. Hey, Rome, did you see that Buster Douglas documentary? I can't believe that Tyson's cut man was not prepared. Dude's face was looking like Ray Liotta's, and they had to use a latex glove to make the swelling go down. Thanks, Nick in Westchester. All right, so aside from that Ray Liotta stuff, and Nick in Westchester, I know you really drew in West LA, man. Stop doing that. But he makes actually a good point. Lost in the Ray Liotta stupidity of the email, they didn't even have a cold press. Like, they didn't think they'd need one. Like, Mike was just going to get in the ring, hit Buster, he was going to fall down, and they were going to get the hell out of there. I mean, they're trying to reduce the swelling. Mike's eye is closed, like he can't see. And Mick wasn't there with the razor blade. Mike wasn't like, cut me, Mick. Cut me, Mick. Like they had a latex glove with cold water in it. That was going to reduce the swelling. Meanwhile, Buster was just snapping that jab off, putting his punches together. Amazing fight. All right, so usually I'm not here to promote somebody else's product, but that was an amazing thing to see. 1-800-636-8686. Jeremy Schapp was the director on that. Hawk and I, not long after Hawk started here, we were in the lounge in one of the airports. And Hawk's like, dude, there's Jeremy Schapp. I'm like, yeah, I know, Hawk. I know, dude. Sell the hell down. Hawk, is this how this is going to go? I'm like, Hawk, is this the first time you've ever been in an airport club? He's like, yeah. Yeah, there's Jeremy Schapp. Right. And his dad was famous, too. And then Jeremy Schapp comes over and says, hey, Jim, I don't know if you and I have ever met. I said, hey, Jeremy, I don't think we have. Really good to meet you. We have a nice little chat. And Jeremy walks away, and Hawk's like, that's Jeremy Schapp. I'm like, right, Hawk, right. Way to stay in your shoes, bro. Way to stay composed. It's all right, Hawk. You're still pretty good at your job. Pretty good. All right, then. Still to come, Cody Blick. 1-800-636-8686. Phone call's coming up in a minute. Now, if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, here's a visual aid for you. If you can see this, I'm holding up a picture. Do you know who this is a picture of? Can you name either one of these two? Quick. Find CBS Sports Network. This is my way to direct you to our TV program. One is Mickey Rourke. Who do you think the other is? Axel. Why do I have a picture of these two? Granted, they look a little different than they used to look, but don't we all? The reason I have this is Phil in Dallas tweets, would you mind not playing that loud, obnoxious rock and roll at the beginning of your segments? Thanks. Rose Axel. You see what this guy did? There's your picture if you're watching on CBS Sports Network, and this guy inverted his name. He called him Rose Axel. Dyslexic, perhaps. Or maybe you're trying to comment, Phil, on how you think that Axel looks. I'm not going to try and get inside your head. And then there's this. Long form. This is old school. Back in the day, we had an actual email contest. And we'd go long form. It was before the short attention deficits of social. We had a fax machine. In fact, an email contest and a fax contest. And they'd be long form like this. Dear Jim, I know there's all kind of sports to talk about today, but let's get real about the story of the day. Did you see that photo of Axl Rose and Mickey Rourke? Again, I probably should have built this into a still for a TV, but I printed the picture because this guy emailed it and so have a lot of you. Did you see that photo of Axl Rose and Mickey Rourke? It looked like a leather factory exploded and then got body slammed by a porcupine. I mean, Mickey looked like Mickey, which is terrible, but Axel, holy hell, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, Axel's pores would just be screaming, time to die, 333 1/3 times. The baddest rock star on the planet looks like a middle-aged biker chick. Dude looks like what Buffalo Bill would have looked like if Jodie Foster didn't find that insect. Look at the photo, Van Smack. That's not Axl Rose. That's Mama Fratelli from the Goonies. So yeah, the Raiders are homeless. Army has a good quarterback, and the Colts have linebackers again. Cool stuff. But Axel and Mickey just took a picture together, and there's more moisture in the Sahara than there is in both dudes' faces combined. Rack me, I'm out. Phil in St. Paul. Phil, you can't get racked for an email, but if you could, I would.
Rack him!
There's more moisture in the Sahara than there is in both dudes' faces combined. Can you zoom in with that fancy camera? Can you zoom in on that? Can you not zoom in? Come on. Closer. Closer. Yeah, I don't want to say I do your job, New York, but can you bring it a little closer? Today would be great. I got a hard out. Sharon, come on, man. Tom, can you kick some ass? Can you get these guys going? Closer. There you go. Hold on. Wait. Yeah, wait. Anyway, nice try. Way to go. Good job. Good effort. When we come back, web.com tour golfer Cody Blick joins us. Listen, the holidays are upon us, and with it, the uncertainty of what to get that special person in your life. Do not overthink this. Give the gift of a Peloton. Peloton is a game-changing indoor cycling bike, which brings the energy of live studio classes right to your home. I love it. I have one. I do it all the time. A live studio class in your own home anytime you want. This holiday season, Peloton is the perfect gift for them and for you. You can give them up to 14 live cycling classes every single day. There are thousands more on demand. I do both, live when I can, on demand when I can't. Also, you can clip in too, as long as they are not riding, with live cycling classes streaming right to your home every single day, featuring real-time motivation from world-class instructors. Peloton is the perfect gift this season. In fact, any season, any weather is perfect for a Peloton. No matter how tough it gets with the weather, there is always a fresh new ride waiting for you at home. And there is still a chance to give the gift of a Peloton bike. When you order that bike by 12:20, you get a free welcome gift. So you'll still have Peloton under the tree this holiday when you get in by the 20th. For more details, go to onepeloton.com. That's onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Pretty happy with myself after that last segment. I'm Jim Rome. Nice to have you here. We are live in Southern California. All right, if you're on hold, stay there. Plenty of time for your telephone calls after the fact. If you know what you want to talk about, hit me up. We're toll free. As promised, we are joined right now by a professional golfer. Two top five finishes on the McKenzie Tour in 2018. He finished 12th in the order of merit in 2018 and has a great story to tell. We are joined right now by golfer Cody Blick. Cody, it's great to have you on. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, Jim. Doing well. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on, Cody. So you got quite a story to tell. Let's go back a little bit first before the story. You grew up in San Ramon, and you played your college golf at San Jose State. After a huge college career, you then turned pro. Cody, what were the first few years of your professional career like?
Yeah, you know, it was a change of worlds, definitely. I left college early, and I really wanted to go up to the Canadian Tour, the McKenzie Tour. I had some conflicts with college and Q school for that, so left school early and got up into Canada and really got tossed around for a little while. My first year up there, I got beat up pretty bad, and you know, the last 2 years I kind of got it together a little bit and started competing, and pretty happy to get some web.com starts now.
Cody Blick is joining us. So this past weekend was web.com tour Q school. Cody, for somebody in his third year as a pro, what was your mindset and your approach going into Q school?
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty big deal. I mean, it's probably the biggest event of the year. I mean, it sets up your entire next season. So there's definitely a lot of pressure and a lot going on that week, but you try your best to just treat it as a normal event and, go about it like you're just playing another golf tournament. I mean, at the end of the day, it's still just four rounds of golf, right?
Yeah, it is. But at the same time, just so people understand this, you have to understand the stakes involved. I mean, if you finish in the top 40 in Q school, that means you'll get at least 8 guaranteed starts on the tour next season instead of having to go out there and play Monday qualifiers before tournaments. So how big of a difference does that mean to you as a golfer?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, it's job security, right? So There are 8 guaranteed starts, and if I have a couple decent events in those first starts, I'll be set for the rest of the season. So to have those 8 events is such a relief. And I mean, if I had partial status, it's still good. But yeah, like you said, you'd have to be going and doing Monday qualifiers, which is an absolute grind. And you really, it's unknown. Like, you don't know what events you're going to play in. So this is easy on the schedule and planning, and it takes a lot of pressure off, for sure.
No doubt. Golfer Cody Blick joining us. So then Q school was taking place at Whirlwind Golf Club in Chandler, Arizona. And then after 3 rounds, you were tied for 74th. So you still had some work to do to get into the top 40. So how were you feeling after those first 3 rounds as you got ready for that final round?
Yeah, you know, the first round was okay. Second round was better. And then the third round, a lot of people don't know this, Saturday morning, I'm on the first tee, and they announce my name, and I wipe the face of my driver off, and I noticed like a 3/4-inch crack in the face. So I didn't know if I was using this altered club all week or what was going on. So that was another panic. I had to flag down a rules official and ended up teeing off with 13 clubs. So I didn't have a driver until the fifth, sixth hole, and luckily Titleist was great, and they hustled one out to me. So I thought that was going to be kind of the crazy thing of the week. And so Saturday night, I'm sitting in tied 74th, and I'm 4 shots out of it. Still felt like I was very much in contention. I was thinking I needed 8 on Sunday to get through, and was feeling okay, to tell you the truth. And then, yeah, when I woke up and the clubs weren't in the garage, it was it was a panic all over again.
See, Cody, for those who don't know, exactly what happened was you get up and you have breakfast on Sunday. Your coach's fiance comes in and says, "Hey, Cody, wear your clubs." What was your reaction when she asked you that?
Yeah, you know, I was pretty confused at first. I didn't really know what she was asking. They ended up going out for a run, and they left pretty early in the morning, and they noticed the garage door was open, but they didn't think much of it. And then they got back, and it was very, you know, nonchalant. It was, "Hey, where are your clothes, by the way?" And whatever, I said, "They're in the garage," and they said, no, they're not. So I ran out to the garage, and yeah, lo and behold, somebody had walked off with my clubs. So at that point, it was a freak out mode, and really just I got on the phone with Titleist 10 minutes later, and they killed it. They got a set together for me in 90 minutes.
Cody Blake joining us. Now, what you also did was you immediately jumped on Instagram and you posted a $5,000 reward for anybody who could return them. So then what happened next? Was there any kind of reaction to that?
Yeah, I was desperate at that time. I mean, I was really just trying to get my clubs back. So I was doing anything I could, but I haven't heard anything back yet. I have a bunch of messages from people in the Phoenix area saying they're on the look, and they're looking in pawn shops and golf shops, and no hits yet. But yeah, that Instagram post turned out to blow the story up. It got pretty viral. I wasn't expecting that.
Cody Blick joining us. So Titleist takes care of you, and how they did it was really impressive. Where was your driver from, and whose 5 through 9 irons were you using?
Yeah, so it was a big scramble. It was piece by piece getting the set together. So the irons ended up being the head superintendent's. His wife had to drive them from their house to the golf course.
Wow.
And Titleist just pieced together a driver and a 3-wood, and then I grabbed some wedges out of the rental bin and a random Scotty Cameron, and off we went.
Cody, did you say rental wedges?
Rental wedges, and actually the 5-iron turned out to be a rental wedge too. It had some S300 high launch shaft, and it was unbelievably light, so that was probably the hardest club to adjust to.
How banged up were they?
Oh, pretty destroyed, but it's okay. I mean, they worked.
They did. Cody Blick joining us. Now, your putter, you had that putter for 9 years, and you said that losing that was like your dog dying. What did the putter mean to you, and then what kind of a putter did you have on Sunday?
Yeah, I had the same putter for forever. I mean, it was an old Scotty Cameron, and it was, you know, the other clubs can be replaced, but the putter you have like that special connection with, and, you know, I had been given other Scotty Camerons from Titleist, and they just weren't the same, to be frank with you. So I had this old, beat-up, awesome little putter of mine, and, yeah, I had this connection with it. So to lose that, it stings, definitely. But they gave me it was some newer Scotty Cameron studio, and it was a little longer, a little heavier, and, you know, I didn't feel totally comfortable with it, but one of those situations where it is what it is, and I just had to roll with it.
Yeah, that's the thing, right, Cody? I mean, so much of that sport is about managing your emotions and managing yourself on the course. Like, when something like that happens, it would be so easy to not only go into a state of panic, but to stay in a state of panic and completely freak out, maybe even shut down. How did you go about managing your emotions and getting ready to play?
Yeah, so my longtime coach for 9 years now, Gary, he was on the bag, so... You know, there were 7 of us in the rental house, friends, family, coaches, et cetera. And, I mean, I'm just so fortunate that they were there. I mean, they calmed me down and kept me in it, really. And then to have Titleist on top of it, taking care of the clubs, I mean, they all made it really easy for me. I mean, the 7 friends and family and 5 or 6 Titleist guys, I had a whole dozen squad on my side there, so they really helped me out.
And then, Cody, in terms of the round, I mean, I have to jump around and skip around a little bit, but on that final hole, you had an 18-footer, and your coach said, just 2 putts from here, you end up birdieing that. I mean, what's it like when that final putt drops? And I hate to spoiler alert for those who missed it, but a final round of 63, given everything you had to go through when you had to have it most, what was it like to drain that putt?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So my goal for the week was to get to 20 under. I felt like that was going to be pretty safe. And going into Sunday, I felt like 18 was going to be the number. So, you know, I kind of had that overachieving goal, if you will, at 20 under. And, you know, obviously on the last hole we were at 18 and couldn't get to 20. But, yeah, Gary looked at me and said, Code, you only need two putts from here. And I just thought, you know, Gary, like, let's just get to 19. And it just so happened to go in. So it was a pretty cool way to finish. Having nine birdies, nine pars is definitely pretty special.
And that round moved you all the way up to a tie for 25th. Man, is there any way to put into words, I mean, as an athlete, as a golfer, as somebody who played the game your entire life, what Sunday was like for you? And then, like, emotionally, what's it like when you walk that thing off and it all kind of hits you?
Yeah, you know, when I was on the course, I didn't know this whole story had unfolded. Huh. So to me, it was just like an unfortunate situation, and I was just proud of myself for the way I got through it, and so happy that my team was there to help me through it. And so I got off the last hole, and my mom was crying, and my dad came up and gave me a huge hug, and you know, it was really cool that I had gotten starts, but it was a bigger reaction than that. They told me it was blowing up, you know how it is, and really was not expecting that at all. So to manage the emotions on Sunday and get through is definitely very special.
Now you got to have a lot of pride to handle that the way you did. So do you think you're going to see these bats again? Are they going to find their way back to you?
Oh, man. You know, I hope at least the putter finds its way back, but I got a sneaky feeling that thing is long gone. So I don't think so.
It's an amazing story. Cody Blick, my guest. Cody, it's a great story. You did a great job of telling that story on the program. I really appreciate you. I hope you at least find the putter, but really good to have you on the show. It's an amazing accomplishment.
Jim, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, and happy holidays.
You too, Cody. Great job. Really well done. Amazing story. You got a guy out there who's just grinding and grinding, and you're going to rip off his clubs before the biggest round of his entire life. And then to cobble that thing together, to play with some rental wedges and to have to play with a bag full of clubs the way he did, and then to go out there and shoot 63 and to play the way he did. Imagine how desperate somebody like that must have been to hit Instagram with $5,000. Just bring him back. Bring him back. No questions asked. I need my clubs. Cody Blick. All right, so we're halfway through it. And as I mentioned, we front-loaded today. We've done all of our interviews, and the phone lines are jammed up. A lot of San Diego listeners, Raider fan, want to weigh in on that topic. Again, I'm not saying that this is where they're going to be. What I am saying is we don't know where they're going to be. We just know they're not going to be in Oakland. They're not going to be in Oakland. The Niners are not going to let them squat. We've already got three teams here. I'm just saying, where could they end up? Well, San Diego would be a possibility. If you're in San Diego and you lost the team you love most of all to the city you hate most of all, what do you think of the idea of the team that you hate most of all coming in and taking their place for a time? Is that something you'd be open to? Also, when we come back, we are talking Temple football. And there is a reason for that. Speaking of the Chargers, Chiefs, tomorrow night, one of the biggest games of the year. Obvious playoff implications. Who do you like there? I want to talk some hockey too. St. Louis Blues hockey, and if I'm doing that, there's a reason for it. You ever see a referee take a puck off his package and have it carry him into the back of the net? I hadn't. I have now. Sunday, it's doubleheader day. It's all about the postseason. Miami taking on Minnesota. In a huge game with a couple of teams fighting for their respective divisions, the Patriots and the Steelers. Both those teams need that game badly. The day kicks off with the NFL Today, powered by Ram at 12 Eastern, 9 Pacific on CBS.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Quick tweet. Ray in St. Paul tweets. Time to pie.
Time to die.
Signed, Julia Child Rose. All right, that thread's dead. Heat branded products are designed to keep your fuel system flowing even under the harshest conditions. Remove water, raise MPGs, clean the fuel system. Heat, baby. Looking at my call screen right now, we are loaded. One line open. All the others are taken. I'm trying to find a way to get you in here. 1-800-636-8686. Quick question first. Exactly what are you doing on December 27th? Better question. What are you doing on December 26th? Because I already know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going to get the fam together, and we are going to post up for the Independence Bowl on December 27th. Because that is easily the most important game of the entire bowl season. Now, do not come up in here and waste my time on Alabama, Oklahoma. Don't care. Clemson, Notre Dame. Really don't care. I did until I saw this. Because now I'm all about Temple v. Duke. The early afternoon of December 27th. Yes, I do know that Temple head coach Jeff Collins took the Georgia Tech job. He's not going to be with that team. I also know this, Collins will not be there, but Ed Foley will be. Ed Foley is interim head coach. And I know this too, Temple has not been this electric since John Chaney tried to fight John Calipari back in the day.
I just got my ass blasted for giving them hell down in West Virginia. And here you get a hell of a job right here today. Good job. Three class guys. And you pick them out and single them out. You can't get that young nigga threatening guys. Shut up, guys. You can't get the threatening guys. Hey, 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 hey,
hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey, hey. And then you got that. If you've not seen that before, that is one of the most unbelievable, surreal exchanges ever. John Chaney going crazy on John Calipari saying, I will kill you. I will kick your ass if I see you. Like, he was ready to go right then and there. That's one you should look up if you've not seen that. Things have not been that electric at Temple since then. But they are now. That was then. This is now. That was then. Ed Foley is the epitome of now. Because Eddie F. showed up at a podium in Shreveport. And my man burned that city right to the ground. Now, you know how this typically goes. You know how these trips go. A couple of head coaches come in. Show up in the host city. They pose for pics with the trophy. Then they spit vanilla platitudes about how honored they are to be playing in the whatever bowl and how nice it is to be in the no-name anonymous city. Except Ed Foley? Not Ed Foley. Not about that life. Ed Foley is all about the Shreveport life. Ed Foley is all about the Independence Bowl. Don't believe me? Then roll this.
But our football team is going to come down here ready to play. We're going to practice really hard. We're going to play really hard. I hope that we play well, but I know that we'll play hard. And we're going to find out about Duke, and we're going to find out about Temple, and we're going to find out about which one of those football clubs wants to hit each other harder longer. That's what we're going to decide here on the 27th. While we're getting ready to do that, I hope that you see the finest group of young men that's ever been through Shreveport. I hope you have a chance to see them hold a door open for you or say thank you for being here or be truly appreciative because, guys, I love this team. And I love these players, and I know you will too when you get around. Please get around our players. They are going to love you. They are going to love Shreveport, and you're going to love them. And they are going to be so appreciative of being here. Guys, it's going to be one of the greatest teams that you've ever had here, I promise you that. So we're fired up to be here. Thank you to everybody for having us.
Go ahead and inject that straight into my veins. No, skip the veins. You can inject that straight into my eyeballs. Eyeballs. Because what Ed Foley has is what I need. I need to find out about Duke. I need to find out about Temple. I need to find out who wants to hit each other harder and for longer.
And we're going to find out about Duke, and we're going to find out about Temple, and we're going to find out about which one of those football clubs wants to hit each other harder and longer.
That's what I need to find out. Man, you can tell Ed Foley. You can tell Ed Foley that there are way too many bowl games. You can tell him Shreveport is boring and it's not the greatest town in America. I'm not doing it. Because for that guy, those are two reasons to go. This guy was raving about the city on the drive from the airport. He told the local media, quote, "We were driving to the hotel. We saw a little shack with a sign out that said, Gizzards, Po' Boys, and Philly cheesesteak sandwiches. I can't wait to try the Philly cheese to see what it's all about here." End quote. My man is hyped on gizzards. Gizzards. And the Independence Bowl, and Shreveport, and life itself. Man, nobody has ever been more pumped to be in Shreveport than Ed Foley. Nobody has ever been more pumped about anything or to do anything than Ed Foley is to coach the Temple Owls in the Independence Bowl. Yo, excuse me, can you give me one quick second? Because there's a freaking brick wall that I need to run through. Why? Because Ed Foley has me feeling that I can. Remember, that's not even Ed Foley talking to the Temple football team. That's Ed Foley talking to the local media in Shreveport that he just met from the mayor's office at the mayor's podium. And in case you were not clear, Temple football is coming to Shreveport, and they are going to practice hard, and they're going to hold the door open for the townspeople.
We're going to practice really hard. I hope you have a chance to see them hold the door open for you.
I mean, what more could you ask for? I haven't talked a lot of Temple football on this show this year, but I guarantee you, that is the finest group of young men that will ever go through Shreveport, Louisiana. Why? Because Ed Foley said so. Now, I've got a rule on this program, a hard and fast rule on this program. That rule is, if Ed Foley says it, it is true. So I know for a fact that Owl players will be holding doors open for people and thanking everybody for everything. You want to tell Ed Foley that the Independence Bowl meant more when it was the Poulan Weed Eater Independence Bowl? You go right ahead. Just be prepared to take a fist to your face before you finish speaking. And clones, because I know what you think before you think it. You can skip the whole Ed Foley went to the Matt Foley School of Motivational Speaking joke. If that fruit were hanging any lower, it would be underground. No, Ed Foley is not Matt Foley. Matt Foley was a fictional character. Ed Foley is a freaking legend, a living legend. He is flesh and he is blood and he is standing in front of you screaming about Duke and Temple playing in Shreveport on December 27th. Texas A&M D coordinator Mike Elko reportedly turned down the Temple head coaching job earlier. Probably because he didn't want to be the guy to follow the guy. He didn't want to be the guy to follow Ed Foley. I know I wouldn't. And no, I don't give a damn that he's never won an FBS football game as a head coach. Temple. I don't want somebody telling me how to do my business, so I'm not going to tell you how to do your business. Just do the right thing. Make this man your head coach. The guy you want, Temple, is the guy right in front of you. The guy losing his mind over the Independence Bowl. 5 days into his interim gig. Coach him up, Ed. Pick him up, Temple. I mean, seriously, boys, do not get rolled by Duke. Do not do your coach like that. Not after he went all Howard Dean in Shreveport. I love this guy. Not Howie. Eddie.
We're fired up to be here. Thank you to everybody for having us.
Nobody has ever been as hyped as anybody is about anything than he is to lead those fine young men into Shreveport to lay a butt kicking on Duke.
And we're going to find out about Duke, and we're going to find out about Temple, and we're going to find out about which one of those football clubs wants to hit each other harder and longer.
I can't wait to find out. And I can't spin that clock fast enough. Get me to the 27th. When we return, an open phone third hour. And lots to get to. It's going to be a good hour. Let's finish strong. Don't forget, Teddy Atlas is my guest on the Jim Rome podcast. I taped it yesterday, so I already know it's awesome. Teddy Atlas talking boxing and his amazing boxing life. That's later on today. Hour number 3, straight ahead.